Hey everybody, welcome to the Green Architects Lounge podcast. I'm your host, Chris Breiling.
And I'm your host, Phil Kaplan. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Phil. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. You're doing pretty great.
Oh, I feel okay. I'm alive.
Well, not only are you alive, but you got a lot of stuff going on in your life, right?
I do, which we should start with an apology, everyone. Hey, you know, sorry we haven't been recording much, but
that's... Pretend that they missed us.
Yeah, you know, pretend like we get a phone call every day. Where are you guys? Hey, there's only so much of us to go around, you know?
The calls primarily from Martin Holiday and Dan Mars.
Right, like,
give it a hard time.
Like,
they're
hey,
right.
Hey, you guys are, you know, what are we? Advisors
We're
now.
We're slouch so, advisors. There's
exactly.
A separate page for us now.
Yeah.
I've heard.
Yeah, they're like, come on, let's get on it. So here we are. Sorry, folks. And today we're gonna do how to choose your mechanical system.
That's right.
Because it's a conversation we have a lot with our clients about, you know, they usually come in with a, oh, let's do this, or I heard read an article about that, or what's the best mechanical system for my house that we haven't designed
geothermal
yet?
That's
right.
What they say.
Oh, yeah.
For
example. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, you have to have a logical way to decide these things, and you know, Chris and I have our systems, and
right.
They're not foolproof, but I think it's a great thing to talk them through, and we've talked to some smart people, and they're going to be chiming in through us as we go through the podcast.
Right, so we'll get to that.
Yeah. Before we go any further, I want to congratulate Chris Breiling.
Oh, thanks,
and
man.
His new partner, Harry Hepburn.
Yeah.
Starting out a new firm.
That's right, which we're calling Breiburn.
Breiburn.
Which is, of course, a mishmash of, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So,
maybe Sheila can find some applause noise and put it in there. Yeah. But we're going to be, you know, just sort of taking it to the commercial level, you know, because Harry has a stronger commercial background, whereas I have a, you know, stronger residential, ultra green background, and he's got a pretty green, you know, commercial background. You know, he's got a LEED Platinum house, that type of thing going on, and so we're going to go even deeper into the green and get into, you know, the just live it, you know. You know, if someone comes in and says, I'll give you $100 million to design my Hummer dealership, I'm just going to say, take a hike, buddy. We're not your guy. Harry, of course, can't hear me right now. But yeah, no, really, we're going to walk the walk. We're gonna really kick it. That's the plan.
I have no doubt. I'm excited for you guys, and right. The sky's the limit for you guys.
And now we're in Portland, Maine, instead of Little Yarmouth, and back in the city. Where you know, this is where I cut my teeth with the other firms and stuff. So now hopefully we'll get together more often because we're in the same town.
That would be nice.
We won't do
podcasts once every 3 months.
Right. we're going to try and do so much better, people. Really, honestly, we are. All right. So there's other things happening.
Yeah. You know, we have on tap. We'll mention it now. We're hoping it's happening, but we've got a verbal commitment from Bill McKibben.
Right. But it's one of those. But I should couch that because it's one of those deals where, you know, it's. You're chasing a guy who's trying to save the planet, literally as much as he can, and so it's like, and we're just a couple of guys who want to, you know, talk about green building. Whereas, you know, if you know Bill McKibben, of course, he is one of the leading, you know, champions of climate change and getting that. So he'd be great. We talked to him briefly.
And, yeah, we saw him when he came to town.
Yeah,
and he was inspiring and he was wonderful and
nice guy, and we hope to have him on the podcast.
But. So hopefully that's coming. We've got a few other surprises that we're hoping to make happen as we move forward. We've
yeah.
got a couple of great topics. We're going to be talking about resiliency and
yeah.
one of Alex Wilson's big pushes, and I think that's on the horizon.
Right. We'll probably talk about the Pretty Good House, too.
That's
probably.
Right. That's a good one.
And then, of course, we should talk about building energy. Hey, folks, if you guys are not familiar, if you're in the Northeast region or even in the Eastern region or the Northern region, you know, or in the United States.
Keep going.
If you're in some kind of region, if you're in this hemisphere, really the who's who of who's really moving the...
and shaking.
Moving and shaking.
Both. They
That's
do both
right.
there.
Yeah, they're hot. It's NESE, which is the Building Energy Conference. And Phil, you're on the board.
That's right.
Of
new,
NESE, so
right.
I'll let you do the pitch for this thing.
NESE's Building Energy Conference is, like you said, it's where it happens. It is... March 5th, 6th, and 7th. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in Boston at the Seaport Convention Center, Chris?
I think so.
Yeah.
I hope so. If not, we'll edit it in. We'll edit it in right here.
Yeah. You know, we've been going for it through it. We've been going to it for about 8 years now running. And
oh, wow.
It has,
good for you.
It has transformed us as a firm. And it's one of the reasons I've chosen to give my time to NESI, because it's, I think it's such a wonderful thing, not only for me professionally, but what it's doing for our movement, our people, our tribe.
Yeah.
So it's hot. It's where it's at. Building Energy Conference. Be there, or
be square. Square. And if you're there on the 7th at 2 o'clock, Phil and I are doing sort of a. We're doing like a the wrap up for the Building Fundamentals course. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a course there, and it's going to be a lot like this. Only everyone will have already gotten all their smarts from all the other people, and we're going to be kind of doing the wrap up and doing the. Sort of a Sprout Follies kind of a thing, because you know, really, we're general practitioners as architects, as designers. All of these nuggets of information and valuable pieces, mechanical, structural, electrical, etc. We have to put it all together, and beauty and function, etc.
Wait, what are we doing now?
I don't even remember what we're doing.
No, we talked about right. before. Right. Yeah, no. So it's Green Architects Lounge, Sprout Follies, 2 o'clock on the Thursday session.
That's right.
So we hope to all see you all there. If anyone listens to this and sees us, hunt us down and
buy us a drink.
That's right.
We should buy them one. But anyway,
speaking of drinks,
hell yeah!
Cheers, hey, Chris.
Cheers, Phil. Oh, clink.
Tell us what you mixed for us. It's very tasty.
Mm-hmm. Well, for those of you, our timing's just a little bit off. January 25th was Robert Burns Day, Burns Night, actually they call it, and mm-hmm. he's the poet for you Americans. I say you Americans. For we Americans.
Why? Where are you from, Lenny?
Yeah, I'll tell you where I'm from. Anyway, Robert Burns, we know him because he gave us Auld Lang Syne. Yeah, this is the poem that was turned into a song.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, you sing it with a Scottish accent. And yeah, drink of kindness for Auld Lang Syne.
I'm not going to sing it, though.
No, that's okay. And you know.
So tell us about the drink.
Okay, yeah, let's get right to it.
What's in it?
Well, of course, Scotch whiskey is the base of it. So it is 1.5 ounces sweet vermouth, 1.5 ounces whiskey, Scotch whiskey, and 1.25 teaspoons of Benedictine. And basically, you don't have to shake this. You're not supposed to shake it in your shaker. You're supposed to. Mr. Boston says you mix it with ice and then filter it into your glass.
Stirred, not shaken.
So, yeah, that's right. Exactly mm-hmm. right. Because that. And careful not to bruise the ice, we say. And then a twist of lemon.
Oh, the lemon is key. Don't forget about the lemon. It really is.
It's a real big... Don't squeeze the lemon juice, but you do the peel, and then you do the bend to get the oils on it, or just YouTube, how do you make a lemon twist, and yeah. You'll see. And then, yeah, rub it around the rim. Yeah,
there it is.
And it's delicious. Great for a warm January night, or for eating alongside a haggis. So there you go. So
remind me never to do that.
Yeah, and so that's for all our Scotsmen out there and women, Scottish listeners. And sorry for messing up the accent. And I apologize.
You weren't so bad.
You know, we just offend everybody left and right.
My brother-in-law is Scottish, so I offend him all
right?
the time. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, Stewie. He loves it when I do that.
It's a good thing he's not listening.
Yeah. All right. Can I tell you about the song?
Yeah, well, you want to do it at the end? Tease it.
I'll tease it. A.C. Newman.
Yes.
I'm not talking.
Okay.
Beautiful song. I can't stop listening to it. I'll tell you more at the end.
Fantastic.
Right on.
Okay, here we go.
How do we start choosing mechanical systems, Chris?
Well, I'm going to start... Let's start this way. I'm going to include a chart you'll probably see it if they're on the side or a link to it on the end. There's a couple of charts we're going to be including. One in particular that we'll start with. It's so simple, you'll look at it and go, yeah, and you'll be done. So it's that good. But imagine a building science discussion group, which we have here in Maine every once in a while, and imagine a room full of maybe about 40 people of varying backgrounds, architects, a few architects, mm-hmm. a bunch of solar guys, some mechanical guys, some insulators, some builders, some renovators, all that jazz, raiders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Dan Colbert starts the session, all right, how do you choose the right mechanical system? And then after a lot of banter and about, the group decides, let's make a chart of that sort of, because you can't say, you can never like totally say this is the best one, mm-hmm. and that's really the root. If you get anything from this podcast, it's going to be there is no one solution.
There's no if then.
than
this.
The,
is, right, yeah. This is not, if logic that, is only a small part of choosing a mechanical system.
Right.
If, some, but...
Right. If that, then this. That just doesn't happen. So there we are at the building science discussion group. So we decide, all right, we're going to make this chart. And this chart is a way to sort of decide when do we start looking at different systems. And it's all based on, of course, the peak heating load. Because here we're in New England, we're thinking about heating more than we are cooling. But so for the peak heating load, we've divided it up into, 0 to 25,000 BTUs, 25 to 50,000 BTUs, 50 to 75,000 BTUs, and 75,000 and over. And so then there's just like certain systems that you look at for, like ductless mini splits, 0 to 25, that's a great choice. Mm-hmm. But if you have 75,000 BTUs or more, your house needs more heat, then you're just going to have ductless mini splits all over the place.
Right,
and
right.
So, you're going to go with a different system. Likewise, if you've got 75,000 or more, then you're possibly looking at ground source heat pumps. But we're going to talk about how that's becoming increasingly less likely. It's been a while since I've done ground source heat pumps.
And then it'll be harder to get off of fossil fuels in general as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you do the ground source.
Right, or unless you have natural gas right outside your door.
Right.
So that's a whole different.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. That's still not out of the question in some cases.
Exactly. So. As you look at this chart, you'll notice that, we've got wood as in a wood stove. Maybe it's your, point source heat. We've got solar thermal, which,
And point source heat, Chris, just means there's one source. There's
one
just one source.
Right.
Thing that produces the heat.
Which means your design, Phil, of course, is nice, open plan.
Compact.
Compact. Right. But, maybe the downstairs communicates with the upstairs thermally easily. And, so you can... With one source, like a wood stove or like a Rinnai heater, one of those things that goes through your wall, a gas heater or something like that.
Don't worry, Chris, you'll still win the design award because of the detailing. It's okay.
Yeah.
The simple form, it's okay.
That's right. You take it where you can get it.
That's
right. You excel wherever you can. and then, of course, you've got your air source heat pumps. Those are fantastic for the lighter loads. Electric in general, as in either electric boilers or electric baseboard, which, of course, zero COP, or one. Your COP
right.
is one, I should mm-hmm. say, not zero. And then, of course, you've got your, what everyone else knows, oil and gas boilers and furnaces. So here in New England, we've got a lot of boilers, but furnaces almost everywhere else, Phil. So.
Well, that's right. Well, tell us about your conversation with Mark Rosenbaum.
Oh, yeah. So
because that's a good lead into that.
Right, because that's a whole other approach. I was talking to Mark just today.
Mark Rosenbaum, of course.
Oh, yeah.
South Mountain chemical engineer, guru.
Right. Honestly, how can you know about Chris and Phil and not already know about...
You can't.
Yeah. Mark, you knew him about him long before you found us. You've stumbled upon us in your drunken stupor.
That's right. He's one of the reasons that you and I are... sort of making this podcast.
Well, that is true. He is. He's one of those guys that we look up to and always will. So anyway, I was talking to him about other things, but I said, hey, Phil and I are doing a podcast, and since I have you on the phone, tell me about how you, tell me about how you choose your mechanical system. I mean, because this is a process that he's got to go through. And he said, funny you should say that, because he's been like writing... internal papers about
right.
how to do that.
This is all he does.
Right. It's like, guiding people towards the right decision, the smart decision. And that's really what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, he started off saying, well, in New England, I'm paraphrasing, of course, so I might be butchering this completely, but, he said in...
Good, get him to chime in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. I'll mess something up intentionally, see if he's listening. But no, he said, in the old days, everything was boilers and hot water heaters up here in New England, because we're heating climate biased, of course. Sorry, everybody. Sorry, warm climate people. But well, maybe I'll write a letter to Allison Bales, have him chime in. Maybe he will chime in.
That's right.
What's best? Hey, Allison, I know you're listening. What's best for the warm climate? And he'll put that down in the comment section.
Excellent.
Or his method. So anyway, Mark says, now that they've made the decision, now climate change has entered the conversation and has become a priority. It's like, well, let's get away from fossil fuels as much as possible. So then to him, it's either electric or biomass. So once you've made that decision, then it becomes a matter of heat load. So like if the heat load is rather high, let's say you're in the 50,000 or more BTUs, maybe you're looking at biomass. Of course, there's some personal, you know, there's no one right answer. Some people may, for example, not want to schlep logs of wood for their log boiler or wood stove. Mm-hmm. And likewise, they may not want to deal with pellets, or pellets aren't available in their area, or that sort of thing, or it's difficult. So on your lighter loads, you, of course, you're looking at electrical, and probably, you know, he said you're looking probably at heat pumps, you know, ground source heat pumps or air source heat pumps.
So that's it. We're done.
We're done. That's cheers. No, no, you know, with the Japanese and the Douglas mini splits, it's you know, a rather easy thing to do to take care of your lighter loaded houses, unless you even go further and do something. Like in Martin, by the way, had a fantastic article. You read that.
That's right. Martin Holliday's article that was in Fine Home Building.
Building Advisor.
That's right. The Heating Options for a Small Home.
Right. Yeah. We recommend everyone read that, because he's got a nice, succinct way of taking you through that same process. But at the end there, you know, he talks about how, you know, in a passive house, the Ultimate Air now has a little combination unit where you can get a
hot water coil.
Yeah, off your ERV.
Which
I don't know how many times we've talked about doing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but usually it's for cooling. Like we can do a cool water coil. But the thing is tricking your ERV to activate when there's a demand for heating and cooling as opposed to for fresh air. So that's a new system I haven't even really looked into. I got to do that. But but we're talking about low heat demand.
Like 15,000.
Or
PG
lower,
probably.
10,
right, so, right, like way down.
Right, passive house territory.
Yeah.
So that was Mark's, you know, general two-paragraph succinct thing. Mm-hmm. It was probably more succinct than I just made it. So.
Right, well, Mark comes in with his ideas of what's most important.
That's right.
Chris, you and I have our ideas of what's most important.
It has to look good, Phil.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, they're mostly in alignment with Mark, but, you know, does not believe in sacrificing energy for looks. He really doesn't.
Right. He's a realist. Yeah. As are we. So.
Realist, but aesthetics are very important in a different way from an architect to an engineer.
Right. So. Well, and likewise, clients are the same way. If they walk by a Douglas mini split cassette, and they say, "God, I hate that thing. Just hate it. Hate how it sits there and mocks me on the wall, looking at me with those cross eyes. I imagine a face in that thing. It hisses at me." And then it's not worth it. It's not going to last.
The client is crazy in the first place. You probably should have walked away a long time ago.
Right. But I stayed for some reason.
You're a good man, Chris. I love that abuse.
Hit me again.
So we all decide what's most important for us.
Right.
And I would say, for the most part, you and I are in alignment with Mark. But we both have clients that have different priorities.
Sure, like they might be just looking at operation costs, for example. Mm-hmm. It might just be like, they might be thinking they're not altruistic, they're not trying to save the planet, they're just trying to save money. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to be the smartest people, smartest kids on the block. Mm-hmm. They want to have a really efficient house. Because maybe, Phil, they know my stat that I've yet to really confirm, but I've heard that, you know, I'll confirm it, I'll figure it out.
But go ahead. Yes.
The cost of a building, your average building, mm-hmm. the upfront cost, construction cost, is only 11% over the lifetime of that building. So.
Wow.
Yeah. I think you had the same reaction last time I said this.
Yeah.
Because I've said this on this podcast, I'm sure. I'm just sure. Right?
I know, I barely listen to you. I'm not quite sure.
Right, you just skip past and you say, "Oh, here goes Chris." Another 2 minutes. There I am. booming voice. Anyway, so alright. So your client comes to you. Okay, I'm a client, Phil. Mm-hmm. I just read about ground source heat pumps. That's what I want in my house.
Oh, okay, here comes another one. Alright, let's go through the logical reasons why we don't use it. And sometimes they still say, yeah, I know that. But we just did one of those up north. We just did one in Mount Desert.
Right.
Ground source heat
pump. I'm not saying
they loved it. And they do love it, and they will love it.
Right. And it's not that that's out of the choice, but the conditions really have to be right for that to be a smart choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that does happen, but increasingly less.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We have clients who came to us and basically said, you want an electric baseboard. And it wasn't a passive house. Maybe it would have been a better chance if it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
If it was.
Right.
We were close to it.
So you're talking about electric baseboard.
It's just electric baseboard, yeah. Because they wanted a silent system. And they were going to buy enough PV to offset it, even though it wasn't a great idea in terms of the energy use and
interesting
efficiency.
For the silence of it.
The silence. Well, we brought them to 3 different heat pumps. And they... Each one, even though it was outside, they didn't like the sound.
That's very interesting.
And that's fine. And they're going to have a beautiful silent house in the woods. And it's going to be pretty, really special.
Well, that's great.
But again, that's what was important to them.
Yeah. And likewise, I'll share a battle scar.
Yeah, please.
Well, you know the Red Fern house.
Mm-hmm.
It's, for those of you, it's a little lead platinum house that has a lot of, it's got like 40 grand of hardware on the roof in PVs and solar thermal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so its demand is really, really low. So we did a similar thing where we cheaped out on the boiler. So it's just like an electric boiler, you know. So basically a hot water heater, essentially, for mm-hmm. the boiler for that house.
Mm-hmm.
But it always really bothered me because, you know, why then? Why at that last moment did we cheap out? I understand the economics of it. You know, the demand, it's not going to be on very often. And it's being offset by solar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a similar argument.
Right.
But it was like, man, or we could have like put, you know, 3 more panels on, or I don't know, and been net zero or something. You know,
remember,
it's like,
panels were a lot more expensive then.
That's
right?
True. That's
you
true.
Were
that's
8 or 9 grand for kW.
Yeah,
we're
that's true.
Less than half that right now.
Yeah, you're right. But
so,
I guess, you know, we could have gone with 1 ductless mini split, mm-hmm. and we would have spent, I don't know, a couple thousand more than we would have with this electric boiler.
Right.
And yeah, if you compared the two, and you know, as little as they'd be used, yeah, would it ultimately pay for itself? But dude, the efficiency of it would have been worth it for the planet. I mean, to go that far and then cheap out at the last second. But the happy part of the story is that that there's now a wood stove in that house and the boiler never comes on.
Excellent. So. That is a happy ending.
It is. A nice happy ending. But, I'm happy to share my scars with everybody.
Well, we've all had them, you know. We've got plenty.
Yeah.
So that leads into
like this scar, Phil. Look at this.
That is wonderful.
So a shark bit me.
God, is that still losing?
No, jellyfish. Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna have it lanced.
That would be great.
It'll be all right. No, I'm sorry, everyone. So yeah.
Pour some whiskey on it.
Yeah, pour a little, you know, Robbie Burns special on it.
That's right. So you said one of the things that bothered you about the house is the climate damage. You know, what's the CO2?
Well, that's a metric for me. And I have clients that are like that. I've got clients right now that's a big part of the metric.
Yeah.
So like gas, we didn't even think of.
Right. That's wonderful. And again, I think that's you and I both are on the same page.
Yeah.
That we try really hard not to have fossil fuels.
Right.
But that's not always the case. Some people, for them, what's most important is the first cost. What is the cheapest way we can?
Right.
We can get in here.
Right. Not the most fun position to be in.
No.
But
we all really have to deal with it in one project or another. And I would say the majority of people on Green Building Advisor, that's always a conversation.
Oh, yeah, always. It's unavoidable.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned how cheap you did this passive house, you know, did it for, you know, or whoever. Chris Corson, you know.
Right.
$135 a square foot,
yeah.
Passive house, and you still have people saying, my God, that's so expensive for the little house.
Right, somebody still chimes in and on the comments, like, that's the best you could do.
That's the best? I mean, come on. I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, jeez.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, I think.
Uh-huh. But there are still people out there, the base modular buildings, you're delivered for $60, $50 a square foot.
Absolutely.
Because so if we're going to change the world, do we really need to get that low?
Right.
It's a nice idea, but wow.
Yeah. So there's
I don't quite see it.
Sphere of influence. I mean, because we're competing with houses on the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
It's a much more difficult one. So first costs, you know, the cost of construction, the install cost, everything as cheap as you can go.
That's right.
That's tough. Often more important than a lot of things.
Well,
and that's when you talk about, you know, gas, when you have gas on the street, those systems can be pretty efficient.
Pretty efficient and cheap. So that's one of those things. But, you know, that first cost scenario also, you know, that first cost concern helps us in our argument when we start, you know, making the envelope more robust and getting heat gains from the from the sun in our window. So because now all of a sudden we can bring the cost of the boilers now dropped considerably, or should have. So in fact, let's look at your spreadsheet. Hey everybody, if you check over there on the side or on the bottom, one of the downloads, it would be an image for
And I can't take credit for this too. This is my smart partner Jesse, who I just ride on his coattails for most of the smart things I say.
We all ride on his coattails.
Parrot them back.
No, Jesse's good. I saw him today, just walking across the street.
He does that.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I was like, hey, and he like sounded wave. That's it.
That's all I got.
That's all I got from him. Just a wave.
But at least you got an acknowledgement from him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And a smile even.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
he looked happy to see me.
I know. And we're done. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Goodbye.
No, so we've got this great spreadsheet, and so Phil, why don't you walk us through this? So, like, we're talking about first costs.
First costs.
How much do these systems cost? Because it's unavoidable. Everyone out there is like, you know, how much does this combo cost versus another?
And you know why else is so important, Chris? I mean, one of the things you and I talk about all the time, that it's cost offsets. If we can,
that's right.
If we can reduce the cost of mechanical systems, then we can put those extra dollars into the envelope.
That's right.
So all the time we make this argument, but can we really prove it? Can we really do it?
Yeah.
You know, and what are these numbers? Is it thousands? Is it tens of thousands? We're showing some of these systems, depending on your choice. Yeah, it's $10,000 or more.
Yeah.
So it's significant, and that buys a lot of insulation.
Right.
That buys a couple extra European windows, maybe one or two.
Yeah, buys you an extra window.
Right. Just make it a big one.
Yeah, exactly. Whew, those things.
So if you're down at passive house levels.
Right. Take us to the chart. So here we are. We're looking at the first one here. We're down really low with our max output. 15,000 BTUs on our chart there.
Right. So you get yourself a great HRV and you get a preheater on it.
Right. Which is, woo,
that's hot stuff. You can do it. Your load is that low. And we're not going to talk about hot water now, but if you know, domestic hot water, a lot of times we're just using electric resistance. In this case, it's a separate thing. And if you really need it in remote spots in the house, you get a little bit of an electric baseboard. I mean, you can do it. You know, Katrine Klingberg does it. Did in her house, her first pass pass.
Yeah, a lot of people have done it.
She got away with it, and a lot of people are still doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just fine when you need so little. So boy, $8,000 to $10,000 for that system.
Right.
That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty low.
Yeah. So can we stay under $10,000 if we go to a system for a regular house? Say our BTUs per hour goes up to, maybe it's still 30, or maybe 25 to 30 max, 30,000.
Yeah, then it's really, you need something in there then. A mini split.
Right.
You've got some real loads that you got to, because, last week, of course, today it's a balmy 42, but last week, dude, it was -2.
Yeah,
whatever.
It was brutal.
Ugh.
And those, mini splits still work.
You bet.
Even when it gets to around zero.
Right.
I hear that's close to, like, the Daikin is about 1.8 COP.
Yeah.
That's
Which is still
pretty good.
Yeah,
that's pretty great.
That's pretty
right?
great at that temperature. Yes.
Yeah. So they're still working. But if you get a mini split and you're disciplined and you have a tight compact house, and so it's single point, and even if you had a couple heads off of it,
right,
you'd still it'd be ductless and you'd keep your costs between $9,000 and $12,000. Yeah. That's assuming you've got an electric resistance hot water heater.
Okay, Phil. What if I've got natural gas right there outside in the street?
Yeah, then it's hard not to go with the John Straub solution.
Yeah,
and he's got a combo hot water tank and air handler. You've got your little boiler, you've got your air handler. Still get a good HRV. We're just calling HRV across the board, and it's a ducted system, but the gas is right there.
Yeah.
You're still $10,000 to $12,000 is kind of what we're calling it.
Yeah.
So all right around the same range.
You're talking about a small duct system, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so but right there, we can do it.
Yeah.
It's a pretty tight number. So you're on fossil fuels without, but we might make a case.
Right.
An alternate that's only a couple grand more is if you go with the tankless water heater instead of the electric resistance, and you get a little Rinnai.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about water heaters on yet in this, as systems go. I don't think we really are. That's sort of a different topic.
Yeah.
You know, the The only other thing that we'd really talk about is like whether you do, you know, the heat pump water heaters, which tangent, everybody, tangent alert.
Yeah, well, let's jump up to that because, you know, we're already at the, you know, the Rinnai can already handle, you know, 50,000 BTUs per hour.
Right.
So our load's already increased. So when would you use a hot water heat pump like the Daikin Altherma? Probably around those loads, you know, 50,000 or more.
Oh, sure. I was talking about hot water, like your hot domestic hot water heat pump.
Ah,
that's
okay.
Where I was going when I declared tangent alert.
Right.
I was talking about
well,
that.
Well, I mean that's what that is as well. So that's the
well,
hot
right,
water
right, right. Yeah. So, but it's a sure, two different things, but the Daikin can do them both. Is the thing.
That's right.
It can. So there is that economy that the pro that you get for having an air to water system like that. Mm-hmm. I was about to tangent off onto the studies that show that, you know, your hot water heat pumps, domestic hot water heat pumps, studies are starting to show that they're adding to they're cooling your house as they're heating your. So the COP is awesome, but you're also going to make something else work extra hard. So you know, that's a different topic. Another day, someone else will tune in and chime in. All right.
So
where do you leave off?
Next thing that it's fairly low loads, but we're going to talk about it because it's if aesthetics are important.
Yeah.
You go to ducted mini splits.
Oh right.
You're adding a good, you know, maybe 10 grand.
Maybe
not that much, but.
If it's a small house, you could get like $5,000 or $6,000 worth of tin knocking.
Yeah, but you do it just for the sake of pretty.
Right.
So, you know, so you're not making those cost offsets in the right way. But boy,
people have spent more for pretty.
That's right. People spend a lot of money on pretty.
It depends.
And we advocate for that often.
It depends, yes.
Yeah.
Depends on what they think pretty is.
That's right. See if we in agree. The eyes of the beholder.
That's right.
Essentially. So that's a different kind of, that's, you know, that's still the mini split realm. So we still stay off of fossil fuels,
right.
Which is nice.
Okay, Phil, now, so like, what if my heat load is way more? My house is bigger, Phil.
Well, there's a couple.
I got 8 kids to feed. 3 cars. 4 cars, really.
Right. So
if
then
you include the RV.
So then you go to the gas boiler.
Yeah.
You know, then, and you still, your heat loads are not where they should be if you're on the gas boiler, but you can still do it.
Yeah.
It's still not a bad system. So they start being more economical once you have these, you know, big nasty houses that are guzzlers, energy guzzlers.
Right. And that's
it's still 20 grand or so.
Yeah.
Sometimes more.
Yeah. And those gas boilers, like a Baxi or whatever, they're you know, they're 94, 98% efficient, you know.
Yeah.
They can be really great. And cleaner than oil.
That's right.
Are we done with that? Have you done an oil boiler ever in the past?
That's a good question. I don't know. No.
No.
High five me.
Yeah, me.
Right on.
Me too.
It feels good.
I think since I've been on my own, I don't think I've ever done an oil boiler.
That's really great.
I mean,
once we got smart enough.
Well, yeah. And up here, you folks out there, you don't realize, here in New England, in Maine, you know, throw a rock and you'll hit a building being fueled by an oil boiler burning #2.
Was that you who threw that rock?
Yeah. But it wasn't your house I hit, was it?
No, it wasn't. Oh, right. Not that time.
No.
All right, so now we're in the higher loads, and then as Mark Rosenbaum suggests wood pellet boilers.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
I love those.
You know, the ground source heat pumps.
They're still there.
They're still there.
If you walked in with a 6,000 square foot house and it's tight, but it's big, kind of a big demand. Mm-hmm. And you said, I'm thinking about ground source heat pump. I'd say, well, let's look at your hydrology in the area, and you just might be, you know. You're right.
Yeah. So what didn't we talk about? We didn't talk about radiant, did we?
I don't know. Did we talk?
We talked about it last time. The first time we recorded this before Chris accidentally erased the entire podcast talked about.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
let's talk about it for a second.
All right, let's talk
again.
About radiant. It's hard to keep track of what we talked about.
That's right. So why are we doing it? Have you done reading recently?
When you say recently, not real recently, but sure, recently. Like within the past couple of years, like I did a house in Yarmouth. It was light green, we'd say. Mm-hmm. You know, better than code insulation and passive solar, but you know, it still needed quite a bit of heat. And and the clients said, "Yeah, I want radiant floor." And I'm like, oh, yeah, they could make sense here. Because I used to do it a lot. But just now and more increasingly don't. The more robust my envelopes get, mm-hmm. the more costly the radiant seems, because you feel you got to buy all that radiant tube, mm-hmm. tubing, hundreds and hundreds of feet of radiant tubing, all on their jointless loops, and they come up to manifolds, and mm-hmm. those have every zone has some circulator mm-hmm. pump to it, and that's managed by a system that, you know, has to, you know, it's another little computer component that has to monitor things, and
complex system that it's locked in concrete and
right. I mean, honestly though, yeah. like I've had a project where clients wanted radiant. I've talked them out of radiant, mm-hmm. and then the builder said, "If there's a chance you may want radiant, let's put the tubes in."
Yeah.
Okay. You know, like,
it's not the worst thing.
That's not the worst thing.
Idea, because some know. Technology is going to emerge.
Right. A couple of grand or less.
The magic liquid that's coming in 30 years.
You're right. Exactly. It was concrete. So it was like, you get one shot at it.
Right.
Why not put the tubes in? So everyone's like, oh, all right. So, but honestly, they're not going to need it and they're not going to do anything with it. But so, I mean, you're talking about buying, you're talking about a $28,000 system, you know, or I don't know, maybe not that much, 25 or I don't know. You're, depending on the loads and the size of the house, of course, but you're talking about buying a lot of hardware for radiant floors. And if your house, Phil, is really well insulated, the demand is so low, let's say you've got 15,000 BTUs for your demand, your peak load,
yeah.
I mean, then you've got a boiler pushing fluids through a slab. I mean, it's
being
overkill.
Great all the time.
Yeah.
And it's rarely going to get the call.
And if the computer component is smart enough, you know, it's tweaked the temperature to be, you know, the best temperature to reach comfort zone, you know, and that's going to be below your body temperature.
That's right, so it's going to be cold underfoot. So that is the thing that people don't believe.
Or not warm. So it's going to be, you just won't even notice it's on.
Right.
So that benefit that you want, that chilly morning where I put my feet down, warm floor, ooh.
Right. Well, I'm a big advocate for like radiant, you know, some sort of radiant source.
I like radiant systems.
It's a really wonderful radiant, you know, some radiant heat.
Sure.
So, you know, if it's a wood stove or pellet stove, you get that. I mean, you know, as humans, we like that. But in these homes, the radiant floor actually doesn't end up being that.
Right. Does. And so once a client understands the added cost, and I mean, it depends. If their house is maybe well suited for that as a distribution method. Maybe it's a really leaky house, Phil. Or maybe the air changes are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, radiant's a great system because it's not really trying to heat the air that's flying in and out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's really trying to, from a radiant standpoint, heat you. So, you know, there are places for that still that are good. But yeah.
All right, so when it comes down to what's most important to you, and we advocate stay off of fossil fuels.
Right.
Keep your lows down real low.
Yeah.
Keep it simple.
There you go. And simple, small, and work on, of course, on other things that aren't your boiler. Because really, aren't we trying to get rid of this part? We're trying to get rid of this component.
That's right.
We're working to shrink it, drown it in a bathtub.
Right. I mean, the best mechanical contractors are the ones that try really hard not to take your money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Advocate for other ways to do it.
Yeah.
Rare to find, but...
Yeah. So I guess, if you're feeling good, Phil, why don't you tell us about your song?
I'm feeling good because this is my second drink.
Yeah, mine too. It's, you know, I like this.
That's what happens when you have to re-record a whole podcast, Chris.
I'm really sorry.
I love talking with you, man.
All right, well, good.
This is good.
Good. Well, we managed to keep it fresh. It feels like a different podcast.
It does. It always gets better the second time. Hey, want to talk about a six-digit idea?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. Because you had one, or you were telling me about one.
I was telling you about one. If so, these things, now this exists.
So then you got to call it a hot zig, because a six-digit idea then would be something,
okay,
something that you would incubate and run, something we're giving them.
That's true, but it's borderline because it, well, you tell me how you want to define it, because it
I
exists,
don't care.
But it doesn't exist in the States. So
we
can't get this.
Six-digit idea, start distributing these things.
That's right. Get
right,
somebody to make the magic box.
All right, tell me.
We heard the magic. They call it the magic box.
Well, and rightly so.
So it's a combination appliance with an HRV, heat pump, and a water heater.
What? All in one box. And
we would have not had anything to talk about today if we had these in the States, right?
Right. Because it's like, what? You got passive house? Well, then you need magic box 220. Oh, which size is it? You know, what's the demand? Oh, this one. No, this one. And be done.
And be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we can't get them here yet.
Right. But
Zender makes them.
And we'll put a link in our article to is it Martin's article?
Yeah, Martin Olenhane's article.
Magic box for your passive house, which would be nice.
Yeah. So that's it.
And they only cost $1 million. No, I don't know. I don't know. But hey,
you
what?
Get it. So that would be great to have one.
And what about the Lunos?
Oh yeah, the Lunos. So this would qualify as a hot zig, right, Chris?
I think so. Yeah, because it's like I saw this. You know, Jesse and I were at the same passive house conference, and I saw this. Yeah, this here. I'm like, at first they look like dryer vent type penetrations. Basically, what they are is it's an air infiltration. It's a way to handle your ERV without the ERV. So basically, there are two portals, two holes in your building with little, you know, filters in them, so that like as ceramic filters, I think they are. Is that right?
But yes.
But one's going to breathe in. So like the ceramic filter is basically the temperature of the air. Mm-hmm. So then one opens up, starts breathing in, and then and it cools down the ceramic. But that ceramic, you know, imparts its heat onto the incoming air, so it's not like super awful. Yeah. And then it stops, right? And then the other hole in your wall knows that one just took a breath and it lets it out. So your house is breathing in two different places and they're talking to each other through these little ceramic filters there. Brilliant.
It's brilliant.
Small, tiny, discreet. And I'm like, whoa, huh. Scratching my chin.
It's awesome. You know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Every person I've heard talk about this before can't help but anthropomorphize these things, because it's like two humans
and
across the room sort of breathing in sync with each other.
And what's so funny is I thought it was, maybe it's nicknamed the Lunos Lung, or maybe someone said that and I internalized it, but it doesn't show up on the thing that you showed me. So.
But it's cool stuff, so kudos to those guys. I haven't tried one out yet, but I'm...
Right. So there's we're not saying this is the end-all, be-all of all this stuff, because clearly creative people are coming out there making better and better stuff. And the better our buildings get, the more we need even better technology to run those better buildings.
Yep, that's right. And technology's happening faster and faster these days, and...
there you go.
These houses are going to get cheaper. These mechanical systems, this whole podcast, Chris?
Yeah.
10 years?
Yeah, meaningless.
Right, completely. Even more so than it is now.
Right, like our Windows podcast. Meaningless.
We got to do another one of those, don't we?
We do. I want to redo a lot of our mistakes.
That was our very first.
Well, no, second one. Actually, I don't know if GBA picked that one up, so maybe that's good.
Right.
So
maybe there's a reason why.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we were cutting our teeth. We were young. Needed the money. Nah. All right. So are we ready for your song?
Yeah. Let's take us out.
This is your favorite song right now.
It is. I cannot stop listening to this beautiful, beautiful song.
Tell us about it.
By A.C. Newman.
Mm-hmm.
He is one member of the super group. I guess you could call it the super group.
You could now.
New Pornographers.
Yeah.
You know, because they've got three talented folks and they all have their own bands doing different things.
Right.
Carl,
but they're not broken up though, are they?
Well, they get back together every now
and then.
That's what
I thought.
Okay,
you're scared.
Produce
you're like,
something.
Oh, but they're broken up now.
Yeah,
okay,
no,
good.
That they all go off and do Nico Case and,
and
Destroyer and
Newman
do their own things. But they're out of Canada,
mm-hmm.
So they're mild, happy folks, and also the climates that we're used to. So
yeah, that's right.
It must mean something.
Sure.
Related to their music.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a real sweet song. It's called I'm Not Talking.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with you and me, Chris.
No, because you can't shut us up.
That's right. So enjoy it.
All right.
And AC Newman, take us out. Chris, it's been a pleasure.
Been a pleasure. I'll see you soon, Phil.
Cheers.
Cheers.
things will look for days. I like the way things are. Abandon the search for an off the road.